All right. We're here with another episode of Confessions of a Street Broker. This is going to be a fun one. Spent a lot of time with this guy. Watched him grown up. Watched him pull off a lot of things. Watched all the ups and downs of brokerage with this guy a lot of times, and sat next to him for a long time, and he pestered me for a long time. But my good friend, David Gwynn.
Hey, very happy to be here, Jeremy. Thanks for having me out.
Yeah.
Let me get close enough to the microphone.
But yeah.
As you said, man, it's, from my career, and I learned so much from you. And anytime I would always hover outside of Jeremy's door, and he's got his headphones on trying to get some work done. And I'm just kind of like, hey, you got a minute.
Hey, you got a minute?
Just a second.
You got a minute.
Hey, it all paid off. So very happy to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
So we pretty much sat right next to each other. My office, your cube faced the opening to my office. So yep. It was just a constant back and forth there. So
you, Turner, me, we're all right there.
Yeah.
Design District in Brook Hollow.
So with Davidson Bogle, you're the director of industrial. Let's just kind of start at, where'd you grow up?
I'm a Graham steer.
That's right.
I was born in Arlington. My dad was actually a real estate broker in the 80s, selling shopping centers kind of up and down Great Southwest Parkway. And then my family, going all the way back to like Colonel E.S. Graham, all lives out in Young County. And we own and manage a lot of land out there. And
Hunted it.
Yep. I have an oil and gas operating company. And then when my grandfather started, and then when he passed away, my dad was basically working two jobs. He'd be selling shopping centers and then drive out to the wells. Drive out to Graham on the weekend, check his wells, come back. And then eventually we hit a couple pretty big Mississippi wells. And when I was in third grade, moved my brother and I out to Graham. And so that's where I went to high school. And yeah. So yeah.
Graham steers. You got to go to, you're a pretty good football player at the Graham steers.
Hey, I had a lot of fun. Your brother, Jeff, had moved to Graham, I guess, when I was like a sophomore in high school. Mm-hmm. And so Jeff had actually watched me play, high school football. And I loved it. Small town. We went to the state our junior year. And just that experience of coming together as a team. And that was the only time Graham had ever been to state. And, I still remember a lot of the relationships and stuff that I had. And, the role that you played in that team. And taught me a lot. Loved it a lot. And was fortunate enough to get a football scholarship to go to Abilene Christian, and went there and played for 3 years and hurt my knee going into the spring of my junior year. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was kind of a special teams hero and backup linebacker that knew the assignments and was kind of the coach's, go-to for questions about what you're supposed to do, just trying to get in the game. But I was pretty dejected whenever that happened, just because my whole identity, and I've listened to a lot of your other podcasts. You talked to a lot of former athletes in this business, and just how much of your identity is really wrapped up in all that. And, grateful for every second, every snap I ever played. So
that's a pretty big theme right there. So, I always say, I don't care who you are and what part you are in life, but when August comes, you automatically identify as a football player.
Yeah, it kicks in.
It all kicks in. And, that's a tough transition to be like, because it's like one day you're on this flaming Ferris wheel and then one day you just get off.
Yep.
And
it's over.
And that was kind of what it was like with me. I knew when I had gotten two MRIs before a bowl game, and we had a bowl game at the Independence Bowl in Louisiana, and I was driving back, me and this guy named Jason Coffey. He was going to transfer, and I was just, my body was done. And I just remember leaving that morning and being like, that was it for me. This is over. And then in spring, I was just sitting around my apartment. All my roommates were at practice, and I was like, this is weird, But for that though, for me, I immediately just poured myself into music. So when you made that transition, you're like, damn, this is over. What consumed you? Cause I think football consumed you, so you got a big void now. So what? Yeah, what?
Absolutely. And so it was spring going into my junior year, and I tore my MCL, but I popped three bursa sacs. And so basically they said, you can get a surgery, but you're going to have to wait 3 or 4 months to let the swelling go down to get that to happen. And, you know, I listened to you and Turner's podcast as well. And, you know, high school, it's like all about relationships. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, but college is definitely a business.
It is.
And I remember like 2 weeks after I got hurt, I meet this 6'4" JUCO guy that they just brought in as my spot. I was like, all right, yeah, it's over at this point.
And, yeah.
You know, I think at the time, maybe I was in the business school, but I think I maybe had like a 2.4 GPA, just not.
That was me.
Not
like a 2.2.
Yeah, not responsible, but it was the weirdest thing, right? You know, like, because all three of my roommates, starting defensive end, starting tight end, you know, one fullback, one tight end, and one defensive end. And so, you know, August comes around, they're all
going to camp,
and I'm just sitting in Abilene, you know, wondering what's happening. And, you know, one thing that just about me, and I've been really blessed, and, you know, I always identify with, you know, you and Jeff, and y'all's relationship. I'm really close, my older brother and my dad. And, you know, my dad, when I hurt my knee, I went to a study abroad at Oxford, which was really cool.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So I got to do, I think it was 4 months there, and I got to take classes there on supply chain logistics.
Yeah.
And that was nice just to get out. And then when I came back, you know, it was really, I threw myself into business school, and yeah, I wasn't in ACU, didn't really have fraternities or anything, but I was friends with all those guys, but I didn't really want to, I almost did it, but then one of my roommates was a member. So I was like, there's no shot I'm pledging and living in the same house as, as him, you know? So I really threw myself into the business school, and, you know, I actually, my dad recommended, he was like, look, David, you're street smart. You're not afraid to walk up and talk to people, you know, you know, from age like 13 to 19, you know, my family would always take the same vacations every year. We'd go to South Padre every summer, and we had a steamboat every winter. And in the summers of South Padre, like, my dad would always recommend to my brother and I, we'd always walk up and talk to girls on the beach. You know, he's like, and it's like me, my brother, and my cousin, Ben Sherrard, and, you know, we'd memorize their numbers. Like, you get three, you get three, you get four, and jog back to the condo and pray you remember and text them, you know, but just like experiences I had growing up kind of helped me be confident and being willing to talk to people, put myself out there. And so my dad kind of said, hey, I think you'd be a pretty good industrial broker. And I went to the Vista Bank building in Graham.
Okay.
And I met Jeff.
Vista, big West Texas bank.
Yep. And his first question to me on the interview was, what's worth more, a dollar today or a dollar tomorrow? Just to show you how little I paid attention in business class. You know, I said a dollar tomorrow.
Yeah.
But some reason, you know, he still hired me to be an intern that summer. And
I think if Jeff didn't hire everybody that got his questions wrong, no one would work there.
Fair enough. But, you know, and so I got to have that internship. It was, I got it a little wrong. I did my study abroad was like May through July. And then as soon as I got back, I lived with my grandmother who lives in Arlington, and y'all, Mercer Company's offices were in Las Colinas.
Yeah.
So I immediately just went to Men's Warehouse, you know, bought some suits, and then interned with you guys. That was the first time I met you, and Keenan Cook had just, he was building out the Fort Worth market.
Yep.
So I got to learn just the system, you know, the Jeff Mercer, Robert Lynn system. And I it just clicked with me and understood it. We, you know, built that market. And ever since then, I was kind of hooked. So I was kind of knew I wanted to do real estate. And so I got, and then taking those classes at Oxford really kind of inspired me on the industrial, like, freight and movement side. I poured myself into it and worked my ass off and got my GPA over that 3.0 to not have my resume, you know, get put to the bottom of the stack. But yeah, I mean, and then I also started a bike rental business on ACU's campus.
Oh yeah.
You know, it was an entrepreneurial class I took, a guy named Jim Litton, and you had to pitch, elevator pitch a prospect, and whoever had the best one, student government would fund your business.
Yeah.
And so I did it, and That was before like Lime Bike or any of those other ride sharing type services. AC is a pretty big campus. And so I bought 50 Trek bicycles and with 10 grand from student government and partnered with the rec center and ran my first little business there for 2 years on campus.
That's cool.
Yeah, I actually got them to approve being able to charge a bike for a whole semester on their student account.
Yeah.
So I saw ACU, you know, it's a Christian university and, you know, a lot of dad's money. So yeah. I saw people just walk up and spend $4,000 on books,
yeah.
but then not think about it because they would just charge it to their student account. So that was like my big thing. And so I did pretty good with it. And there's this organization on campus called Wildcat Ventures. And basically, I was one of the businesses on campus in that organization. So we went to a conference in Orlando, Florida. And it was Halloween. So the night before, everybody went out. And there was a breakfast speaker at 7 o'clock the next morning. And I was the only one that woke up. I don't really know why, but I woke up and I, you know, got a cup of coffee and got my breakfast. I'm sitting at a table and this guy comes and sits next to me and I just strike up a conversation and says, what do you want to do when you graduate? And I said, well, I had an internship at an industrial real estate firm in Dallas. And, you know, I've been taking a lot of supply chain and logistics classes and I'm really interested in it. And that's what I want to do. And, you know, it's those conversations, you never really know what's going to happen. But he's like, well, hey, here's my card. Shoot me an email with your resume. I know some real estate guys in Dallas. And it turned out he was a keynote speaker for the whole event. It's this guy named Toby Thomas that owned a bunch of companies, owned a bunch of buildings in Valwood. And from that one little interaction,
yeah,
I got 8 interviews.
That's awesome.
You know, CB, JLL, you know, and one of the guys that he was friends with was Blake Kendrick.
Yeah.
And, you know, I met Blake and then I met Boozer shortly after from the ACU football connections and got a job at Stream right out, like graduated May and started in Stream's office June 1st.
There you go.
Streaming
it up.
Yeah.
So, okay. So June 1st, what is this, like 2015?
Yeah.
Okay. So you started Stream. I guess Stream kind of has like an analyst program, right? So you start as an analyst there first, right? So you're pretty much calling other brokers, hey, is this available? Mm-hmm. What's your pricing? Mm-hmm. No one's calling you back.
Yep. No, and, you know, 100%.
But after 3 months, someone starts calling you back.
Right.
And so you're kind of putting together the market surveys for the lead broker and stuff like that. And
Boozer, I was Boozer's first hire.
Yeah.
And they hired me. They hired Corbin Stahl from Dartmouth, who's now runs acquisitions for Leon Capital.
Yep.
And then Forrest Cook.
Okay.
He just got his master's degree at Texas A&M, and he was going to go work with Seth Koshak over in Fort Worth. And Boozer, I was an analyst, and if I was going to stay at Stream for a long time, you know, it probably would have been a little better for me to be a little bit more humble and stay in an analyst role for 12 to 18 months, you know, but at the same time, like, and Ryan, I mean, it impacted me a lot. I mean, Ryan, I would ride around in his car every day, you know, for at least 4 hours a day when he would go out and make calls, you know, and I wasn't really allowed to talk unless spoken to.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'd sneak in through the dock door and Harry Hines and go, you know, find a guy that wasn't calling him back and just got to kind of see the way that he attacked the business and the way that he was doing it and trained by Jeff. You know,
a machine.
And he really is. And, you know, so it was incredible to get to do that. But also, you know, I had the analyst role and, you know, eternally grateful for all the experience that I had there, you know, because I got to see that was at the time when the industrial division was run by Blake Kendrick, Cannon Green, and Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, and Cannon's now head of development around the whole country. Blake is like the COO of all Stream's offices. You know, and then now it's Ryan and Matt, but I got to see, you know, 10 other brokers just be consistent and be professional and crush it, you know? And so, I mean, I was 22 and single with nothing else to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you know, Ryan's whole thing with me was 1200, you know, fully inputted
records
in ACT with accurate lease expirations, building square footage, building ownerships. And, you know, so I was so desperate to get out in the market. It's kind of like I was a little brother with nine older brothers, just desperate to prove I could do this thing. And, you know, so I was an analyst for about 3 months to 6 months. And then I had my, you know, I would drive down Singleton Boulevard with a notepad and a pen, just write down, okay, Keller Logistics is here, GAF's here, go back, input. I had a pillow in my desk. I was pretty much sleeping there. And I was just so looking forward to getting out in the market. You know, I was kind of neglecting some of the things that they were trying to teach me. And looking back on now, I was, you know, that's my personality. It's a lot of our personalities. Not
so. Let me ask you this. Is it really your CRM hygiene was a little funky?
I actually, at that point, when you knew me, my CRM inputting was pretty bad. But at that point, my CRM was perfect.
I'll tell you the one thing, you know, me and Boozer worked together for a long time, and that dude's database.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Spotless.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah. And that's what, I mean, aside from what that guy could do on the street and whatnot, his CRM was just impeccable.
Well, and also, like, you know, July 4:30 on a Friday, if that guy's got 6 more calls to make in person.
Yeah, he'll make them.
We're going to do it.
I'll tell you a funny story about Boozer. He had this Maxima and it had a hole in the floor. You could literally see the road. We'd drive around in that thing. I'd be like, we had a mat over it. And I was like, oh man, this could get, your foot falls through there. Your foot's coming off.
You know, but he's, you know, so yeah, I was at Stream for about 18 months,
okay.
You know, and I, like I said, I was an analyst and I, you know, I was grinding, working so many hours. And
yeah,
they finally annoyed Ryan enough after 6 months. They're like, all right, let's see if you sink or swim.
Yeah.
You know, and so but I was ready. I mean, so.
And so was this, so in an analyst role, you're probably getting some kind of salary, right? And then when you.
I didn't want it. I was just
when
like.
When you want to get your wings, you know, it's like, all right, the gravy train's gone. You gotta go make it happen.
I think it was like $1,600 a month or something like that. And, you know, which was fine for me, but I was just like so ready to give back that salary and just get out there. And
right.
Because like I said, I interned with you guys.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Keenan doing what he was doing. And then, you know, I just wanted to get out in the market. And, you know, so my market at Stream was West Dallas and Redbird.
Yep.
So Singleton all the way to Loop 12, all the way down to 20, and then Redbird and up, you know. And so once they finally, you know, they hired somebody else to take my analyst role. So I went into production and I was working with Ryan while I was an analyst. But then when I went into production, I was working a lot with Haynes and Mosier, you know, so I was just handing out. I mean, it's not sustainable, but first month and a half, I mean, I was 100 in-person cold calls like a week.
Yeah.
You know, just handing out. I didn't have anything else to do.
Well, as you should. Right. That's the point. Yeah. I always think that's funny. So any young brokers listening to this, if your cold call requirement for the week, if you're doing in-person calls, is 50 and it's your first couple of weeks, you better do 100 because let's be honest, 50 cold calls should be done by Wednesday at noon and you don't have anything else to do the rest of the week.
So you're going to lock in and work a certain amount of hours a week. So that's all I was doing. And, you know, and in my, it's like I, now that I'm running my own team and I hired a 21-year-old from SMU with a similar personality profile as mine, like I get some perspective on how I was viewed from the people at Stream, you know, because all I wanted to do was get out and call. But I mean, I went out and I was in my mind, I thought I was crushing. I was producing well and I was, you know, selling buildings and I was not fee hungry. I would literally, every deal I would do, I would try and go get control of it. And then I'd bring in a senior broker just to try and learn from them. And, you know, I was, like I said, I thought I was doing pretty well, but I wasn't the most emotionally mature. I was the first job out of college. And, you know, I don't really understand things like, you know, in July, you know, at the Wiffle Ball Park near Victory Park, Dallas Mavericks, you know, you have a happy hour with HFF. Yeah. And I show up and, you know, a gold, you know, they would give you at Gold's Gym a tank if you could bench 300.
Yeah.
So like I had my rolled up tank, these little shorts just ready to hit dingers.
Yeah.
And everybody else's golf shirt and khaki pants. And I was, you know, I was just like, that just shows you like how limited my knowledge of how the corporate world really works. So after about 18 months, you know, I thought I was doing pretty good, but they actually, you know, they sat me down and they basically said, hey, David, we're hiring not a broker, but she's from Goldman Sachs. My only institutional market really was like Pinnacle Park, Lone Star, you know, that area. And they were like, we're going to give her that. I was like, well, that's my market. Where am I supposed to go? And they're like, well, you can leave. And I was like, okay, well, I don't really have a choice. It's not like they gave me a choice. They fired me, but it was like, you know, I was like, okay, well, then I'm leaving. And it was a big moment in my career, you know, just impacted me a lot. And, but also like I'd made the guys on the team, you know, the Matt Dornacks, Eric Crutchfields, Wolcott, Haynes, Mosier, you know, all those guys saw me sleeping there and just grinding. And so they gave me a lot of recommendations. So I got to take a little bit of a lap around the brokerage scene. And, but then, you know, when Landon Broach left Mercer, you know, the first call I made was Jeff.
Yep.
And then I went and met Jeff and Corby at an IHOP on I-20 in Arlington. And they just said, this market's open. If you don't want to deal with the corporate BS, come grind. And I said, done.
Well, you know, so I think there's a lot of paths people can take in commercial real estate. And I think knowing you and your personality, whether it had been 18 months or 36 months, you wouldn't have made it at Stream.
Nope.
They're, like you said, they're corporate. Yep. They're, you know, and you're an idea guy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want your ideas.
Well, and looking back,
and that's not good, bad, or indifferent against Stream. That's just they're a different animal, right? Like, you're a locker room.
Oh yeah,
they're a fraternity.
Absolutely.
So,
and looking back on it, I'm eternally grateful. My path led me there first, you know, so I could, because the experiences I got there and getting to spend time in Cannon Green, you know. I remember they do a good job of like bringing young guys out to all the projects they're doing. Yeah. And they were developing a spec building out in Alliance.
Yeah.
And this tenant just stumbled into their project and they're like, what are you doing here? And I got to hear the story of how Cannon Green, just from that one interaction, turned into like a 750,000 square foot build-a-suit for Farmers Brothers Coffee.
Wow.
And just how he just pulled that deal out of his head and just created it. He didn't even own the land next door.
Yeah.
He's like, no, we have that land next door, you know? And then he just negotiated it all. So as you said, like it, I agree with you, like my personality, it wouldn't have worked out a long time. And,
but you know, at the end of the day, like that, I feel like one of my biggest flaws is I never worked anywhere. So I don't see how other things, I've never really seen how other things worked. I've just kind of had to make things work the way I think they work.
Yep.
And that's why I think it's a big part of your career that happened to you that teaches you how to do some certain things that you wouldn't have learned being at certain shops, right? And so at the end of the day, there's some of the top brokers in Dallas have been fired.
Yep.
And it doesn't really matter. So it's just that part. It's those times in lives where you got to like,
Lean in and put a chip on my shoulder, and I think it's a good thing.
Well, it's kind of like back into to football, right? They bring in this JUCO linebacker, and you're like, I got to find something different.
I think, the different was, it's like I have the skill set in commercial real estate to kick the ass of that JUCO guy.
Right.
So I was like more, and at the time, I was really mad, but over kind of during COVID too, really, I tried to meditate more and just kind of reflect a little bit more. And I kind of looked back on it and I'm super grateful for all those guys. And, but also, you know, the best thing that ever happened to me was going to Mercer and just getting to the roots of what Ryan was trying to teach me. He learned from the OG, which is Jeff.
Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't really mind if I took listings with me, you know, so, and I had a database of 1200 contacts of Redbird and West Dallas.
Yeah.
And then I got the design district, you know, from Landon. So it was like, all right, I'm literally now that I'm the Trinity on both sides, yeah. and then I'm Redbird, mm-hmm. and I did a little bit less Redbird.
Yeah.
And I was able to just kind of hit the ground running, and then Turner had just kind of came over from the, I think it was about a year after I left. He'd left the airport yeah. and started working with you and just hit the trenches, man. I mean, all the guys at Mercer just are us. You know, like it just, I just loved that locker room. Like if somebody gets a deal, you know, it's, you're basically, you see him, you know, I use a baseball analogy with my young guys a lot. Yeah. You know, it's, I love, you know, a lot of football players, but you know, baseball, it's like, I see you hit two home runs in a game. So it motivates me. I'm gonna go out and make more calls. I'm gonna do this, you know? So, that's kind of the way I got to Mercer. And, you know, we were there 3.5 years and worked mm-hmm. a lot together. And we got some funny stories, I think. Absolutely. You know, we could share. And
I think the funniest, one of the funniest stories to me now looking back on it was when we got in an absolute screaming match.
Which one? I don't even remember.
I know, no, but there's one I remember. What was it? Oh, God. It was, we were trying to sell some building.
Some building, yeah.
You were like, I got it. I was like, no, give it to me. I got it.
Yeah,
we were
just like that.
Yelling. I mean, like, I think everybody in the office was like, holy shit, what's about to go down?
Yeah, but
you know, but I mean, it's funny, like, an hour later, it's like, hey, what's up? Okay, you know?
Hey, well, I know you just yelled at me, but like, what do you think about this?
What do we do?
It's like, just moving on. And, so, yeah, I mean, interesting time too. You know what, middle of 2016,
yeah.
you know, so it was like the market was still a little quiet at that time. But mm-hmm. then once, after I got my first full year under me, you know, that's when the market really kind of started picking up on an institutional side.
Yeah.
You know, so got to kind of put some stuff together and grind it out. And, you know, the design district is 95% sales and all ideas. You know, it's all dreamers. And so that was good for me, my personality.
Yeah.
And, you
yeah.
know, to get to make relationships with people. And,
yeah. You know, design district didn't match up with me. I tried it for like a week and I was like, this just ain't me. I'm going to Redbird. So, but for you, it worked out very well. And, you know, so, all right. So you're at Mercer Company 3.5 years and then you and Scott Lake.
Yeah. So we talk about dreamer markets.
Y'all are like pillow talk buddies every night. That was my joke with Ryan Boozer. Him and Blake Carey and Drake, they were just, you know.
Well, Design District in Trinity Groves. Groves was really like from 2015 when I was handing out 100 cards a week over the Big White Bridge coming out of downtown. All of that was industrial.
Yeah.
So from the time I was right out of college, I was just making relationships with building owners over there.
Yeah.
And when I left Stream, you know, there was a listing that I had been chasing and then I got it. When I got to Mercer, you know, it was Pinnacle Marble and Granite. And it was 2920 Sylvan Avenue. And it took me forever. I actually learned what debt to equity ratios are on a lease back for mortgages, you know, of selling a building and putting the lease right here, dropped twice. Finally, you know, Lloyd and Jim, I look back on them as grateful for sticking with me, but we all learned together. And once I explained to them, I think it was either you or it was, J.K. Walker finally explained to me why this is not financeable.
Yeah.
And so when I explained that to them, they let me fix the lease back to make it an actually attractive investment deal. And when I fixed it, I had three offers come in.
Yeah.
It was two direct offers and one offer from this broker named Scott Lake.
Yep.
And I remember, you know, it was actually right at the time I didn't even know who he was, but it was like a buddy of mine signed up for this Tony Robbins event.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a salesman, right? So he's like, okay, if you wait till here, it's this price. But if you sign up now, you know, you save $1,000. So I was like, okay, go. And then like 7 months later, I forgot I signed up for it. And then it was like, oh shoot, okay, well, I'm going.
I've already paid for this.
And I didn't even know what I was walking into. But, you know, it really impacted me.
Yeah.
Like the way that he presents information, the way he carries himself, mm-hmm. like a lot of his like, ideas and wisdom, I feel like comes from the book Proverbs, but he drops F-bombs and is really like taboo words. Like he gets your attention. And so I retained a lot. And one of the things that I took from that is his whole, it's called proximity is power. And mm-hmm. it's like who you surround yourself with a lot of times kind of defines who you are.
Right.
But there's a caveat. It's like, doing things for people without asking for something like an immediate return, mm-hmm. you know, can help grow you as a career. And so I remember like coming out of the event and I had these three offers, two were direct. I would have made double the money, which was important to me at that point.
Yeah.
But I remember going back to the office and running a co-star search in my market.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, who am I going to be competing with over the next 3 years?
Yeah.
And it was my little three listings in Trinity Groves and like 20.
Scott Lake.
I was like, all right. So I called Scott. I was like, look, my client doesn't care who buys it. They're all the same price. I'm these offers. I'll make more money, but I'm going to do the deal with you. I want to use it as an olive branch to start working together. It seems like you have all these buyers. I don't understand where they come from.
Yeah.
And, but I've got a relationship with every owner mm-hmm. until you screw me. I'll share my whole pipeline with you. Let's just start working together.
Yeah.
And then while we were at Mercer, man, like, I think we did 13 deals in a 2 mile radius.
Wow.
In Trinity Groves. And I would just find an owner and he'd just say, it was the first time in my career.
Yeah.
Hey, Scott, I've got a relationship with this guy and they may need to relocate somewhere else, but I think they might sell for this. 30 minutes later, offer, go.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that had ever really happened to me. And so my time at Mercer, you know, just, I mean, the ski trips in Tahoe and bring, bring. I don't know if anybody's brought that up on the podcast yet, but that's an inside joke. You got to work at Mercer Company and you got to qualify for the producer trip to hear that story.
Yeah.
Leaving was the hardest thing I've ever done. They actually offered me like a big signing bonus to go the summer before.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, just, I don't want to talk, you know, this is a real estate podcast, but just, I remember like praying so hard about it
mm-hmm.
and like seeking wisdom and talking to people. And, you know, there's the book of James that says, you know, if you ask for wisdom, it'll be mm-hmm. given to you. And I remember just like sitting down with Jeff because I'd been at Mercer for 3 years, right? And everybody always tells me, and any real estate guys on this podcast, it's like when you're at a company for 3 years, that's kind of when you really hit your stride and you want to know, you know, really what you want to do.
Yeah.
And you kind of take that fourth year leap. And for me at Mercer in the design district in Trinity Groves and these dreamers, you know, and I saw you, you know, and I saw Corby and Keenan and, you know, the guys that done Million Gross, you know, y'all all had the attention to detail. Like you were talking about Ryan and his database.
Yeah.
That incoming, you know, 250, 300 every year on mm-hmm. renewals and existing clients. And my business was in sales. So it was like, I didn't really have it. And so, you know, but like I said, when I prayed about it that summer and God told me no. So I looked Jeff dead straight in the eye and I said, hey, like I had these questions of stuff I wanted to kind of ask him for. I remember tearing it up. I was like, I'm not going to ask you for anything. Yeah. Like this is where God wants me to be. I'm fully committed and I'm here. And then Jeff turned around and, you know, kind of offered me the things I was going to ask for without even asking. It was a really cool moment. I was fired up. And then, you know, and then I called, you know, Davidson Bogle and they were mad at me. But at the same time, like I still had like 8 deals going with Scott. So I still talked to him every day. And then finally, there's 4 partners, Davidson Bogle. And David Davidson took me to dinner and just said, hey, look, you know, we were going to give you a signing bonus for this past summer, but and that's gone. But we get so many incoming leads every day for industrial that mm-hmm. we're going to start an industrial division here at the company. We like you. We want you to do it. But if you don't, we're going to hire somebody else.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So, you know, basically made the decision. So June, right in the middle of COVID, June of 2020 is when I made the switch. And, you know. So that's kind of how I got there. But, you know, like I said, just all the experiences that I learned and I give credit to you and everybody there just for putting up with me and my idea, ADD, run around, slow down, David, you know, I still work on some of that, but it just, you know.
Well, it works for you too, though, as well. Yeah. Right. You know, it's, you know, sometimes you probably pester people, but mm-hmm. sometimes, and some people probably are like, I'm sick of this guy. And then some people are like, this guy's pestered me so much. I'm just going to do it.
Right.
And I mean, that's what, you know, it's funny is I hear that from a lot of my clients about Chase Miller, right? But the guy's successful as hell. So it's, you know what, man, not everybody's going to love you. If everybody did, there wouldn't be any room for anyone else. So.
No, I'm not very sensitive. And, you know, just, and two, like, you know, and everybody always kind of talks, and it's kind of common knowledge, but it's like all the successful brokerage, industrial brokerage companies in Dallas, I feel like came from like that 80s class of either Robert Lynn, Trammell Crow, or Henry S. Miller.
Yeah.
You know, no, I don't know too many of the Henry S. Miller guys, but I know the Crow guys and I know the Robert Lynn guys, you know? And so the training that I got in those 6 years, you know, from, you know, Chris Jackson, Blake Kendrick, Cannon Green, you know, Boozer, all those guys. And then coming to Mercer, where it was just put your head down and grind and then be in the trenches with other guys that are super successful. Like, I would stack my resume up in terms of training and learning industrial versus any other. I couldn't have gone any other path to learn more about what I'm doing now. And then getting to Davidson Bogle, you know, it's DB2RE, and the two and the company name is because all the principals are second generation real estate developers in Dallas.
Yeah.
So it was like taking my work ethic and my knowledge of how industrial real estate works and last mile logistics and last mile is your favorite word.
But core infill.
Core infill. That capital, equity capital, LLC, you know, and, but then just coming to Davidson Bogle, and it was like, Scott was giving me a, hey, here's an offer, go chase. Then it was like, okay, hey, David, meet Susan and Jessica at MTG. Hey, David, meet Fernando de Leon. Hey, David, meet, you know, so I found a building up in Hines, you know, and it was a UPS building.
Yeah.
On North Haven.
Yep.
And Fernando, you know, Fernando had said, David, I got this 1031 money. What deal you got? And it was brokered by Brandon Cattu over at JLL. And I said, I don't know why, I just really like this deal. It's got a lot of parking and, you know, it's a 56,000 foot industrial building. And it's like $4.2 million.
Yeah.
You know,
and what a deal.
put that together. And then I remember calling you and saying, hey, I'm meeting all these big players when I'm buying Brook Hollow. And I'm like, Jeremy, what is the biggest industrial deal you know of in Brook Hollow? You know, and you're like, well, hey, look, I've got a client who's under contract on this deal, but they might flip it for this.
Yeah.
You know, and it was Proto Park, you know? And so I didn't know at the time because I'd met MTG previously.
Yeah.
But they had structured that deal with Pennybacker to where that deal had to close in like 40 days from start to finish, you know? And like, there's that renewal option with Morrison that was screwing everything up. Yeah. The roof is condemned. The lights are screwed up and the truck court's short and it's all jacked up. But, you know, I just had an idea and I was with the right people with the right capital stack. And, you know, they bought it for $56 a foot or whatever it was. And Stephen Bailey is now selling it fully leased for 140, ask if 146 is what I heard. Yeah. You know, so it was really cool, you know, just to get to when I transitioned there, it was like all the ideas that I had were kind of getting paired with the right capital. The
people that could do it.
And the timing too. I mean, COVID, like the growth in the logistics market, you know, from June of 2020 to December of 21. I mean, but
it's funny. Every time I drive by Proto Park, I kind of like forget and then remember, go, oh yeah, I got paid on that.
Bingo, baby. You know, so
you sold it, but you're like, you got this deal. And I was like, I can put this together because these guys are about to drop it. So. Yep. So you paid me on it. So that's mad props for that. Hey, thank you.
Always will, man. But no, it's been great. And then just to, like I said, really just to take all the things I learned and then just let those guys in the office see the work ethic that it takes to be a successful industrial real estate broker and making calls and relations because they're primarily a land platform, you know? Yeah. So it's land's a totally different animal.
Long
right?
game. It's very it's long game.
Very detailed maps and connecting with postcards to this owner and this. And I was like, no, I'm going to walk next door here. I'm going to do this.
Land is, I always say in street brokerage, you're building a puzzle, playing chess, checkers and poker all at the same time, but land is like 100% chance chess.
Yep.
Like you are, but you're playing chess with, you're playing like six games of chess at once. Yep. Like you're maneuvering this family, this person, this guy, assembling this, and it's
city will put sewer in here. Yeah. You got to keep an eye on that.
And then you go to zoning and some idiot shows up and deny, you know, screams and yells about your change because they don't want change. And
well, so blend it out too. Like, so I mean, the first year and a half, like all I did was just Broke Hollow, GSW. Like, it was the first time in my career also that I could go to whatever market I felt like.
So, okay. So that's something I was wanting to get into with you, because you worked in Stream and then Mercer Company, where it's very sub-market specialization focused. But then when you got to Davidson Bogle, you kind of fly around the Metroplex now. Yeah. And you know, I think a lot of that lends it to just, you're really focused on the iOS sites for the most part.
Yep.
But, honestly, I kind of feel like that's kind of where you always needed to be, because mm-hmm. you just have these ideas to go over here and over there and over there and do this and this and this and this. And it all kind of, you know, some of them stick, some of it doesn't. Some of it sticks really, really well.
Yep.
And, you know, so I think that's,
yeah,
I think you kind of found your home.
Absolutely. Like, I got to work in Trinity Groves was, I learned what a 1031 exchange was, and I learned how to structure a deal where, hey, I'll sell my building, but you got to go find me one first.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I was young enough that I would actually go do it.
Right.
You know, hey, here's 14 options that could work.
Yeah.
So that I was learned,
back when you could find 14 right? options.
And then I learned that process. And then it was like, okay, now where else is the growth going?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, like let's go up and down Loop 12. Okay. Let's go over to North Earth. Let's go over to Grand Prairie. Let's mm-hmm. go to GSW. And, mm-hmm. I don't have the time to write the market reports the Stream does that are so incredibly awesome, and I'm going to miss deals by spreading myself out too far.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, being able to take my ideas for the first time in my career and apply them to different areas, you know, was really kind of invigorating to me. And so I was all industrial for a first year and a half, mm-hmm. really. And then, you know, by working at a land platform and being surrounded by, you know, Edward Bogle is, you know, I think he's DFW land broker of the year, like 5 years in a row, you know,
awesome.
Like he's the smartest land broker I've ever met. And just like I did with Jeff, I didn't have to, but I put it in my employment contract that once a week, every week I sit down with Edward and we just go through my pipeline and
he'll still do that.
Yeah. Every week. Yeah. And, it's the experience just getting to learn, and from that just getting to learn the land market,
mm-hmm.
I grew as a land broker.
Yeah.
And then call it February of like 2021, I got introduced to this client from Scott Lake. They had bought like multifamily land and townhome land and the Cedars and the design district from Scott for many years. But they said, hey, their name's Abingdon Square Partners. They want to talk to you about industrial. I said, great. And they said, hey, we've got this family out of Israel. It's a big diamond family. They gave us $60 million in equity and we want to buy iOS. And I said, okay, what's that? And then they kind of, you've always brokered these low coverage industrial deals your whole career.
Yeah.
But when they explained it to me, I had just spent 3 years chasing these like off-market deals in Brook Hollow and everywhere else, you know, where you can see last mile fundamentals of this can't be replaced because you can't assemble enough land. And they kind of just explained to me, okay, David, these are the type of sites we're looking for. The zoning is the most important.
Yep.
This is what you need. Infill markets, they lease for right around this. And then outfield leases for right around this. And we want to stabilize at X yield on cost.
Yeah.
And it was like a light bulb went off in my head. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we got a list of sites from them. We put 7 sites under contract for them and they kept extending my deals. It was about 120 acres and they kept extending my deals. I didn't know why. And they ended up closing them all in 1 week in December of that year.
Yeah.
And turns out they actually used those 7 sites as a catalyst to launch their fund with JP Morgan. So the company's now Zenith.
Yeah.
So it was like, and we were so early in iOS that like we were buying sites like at Duncanville and Ledbetter.
Yeah.
I remember I made this relationship with Daryl Hendricks, SDS Heavy Hauling.
Yeah.
And all the developers had offered him like $4 a foot, you know, $4 a foot. And I called him and he told me that. He's like, I'm not selling for $4 a foot. I said, okay, well, I ran my little back of the napkin iOS equation. And I said, all right, what about $8 a square foot? And he was like, you bring me an offer at $8 a foot. I'm signing all day.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. So I made a call and we brought him an offer. And then I called Evan Webb, who you and Evan listed the land next door.
Yep.
Just south of the gas station. We put that under contract for like, I don't even remember, like real cheap, like $1 million.
Yeah.
It was like 5 acres. And then we put the other corner under contract. So the whole thing was like 30 acres at the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and to a developer, everybody's like, oh, it's so expensive. But for us, it was like $400,000 an acre. And
yeah,
then
sounds cheap.
Got some leases done and then ended up flipping it to Austin Industries for a consolidated equipment yard for $16 a square foot, you know? So just an example, like we were early and we just got to make a lot of relationships within that space and starting to see unbelievable amounts of institutional capital chasing this product.
Yeah.
In terms of like, I mean, I had meetings over the last few weeks with, you know, like Triton's a big buyer for iOS, you know, and I'm really close with one of the guys that works there in Dallas. And he was like, look, like our equity used to be Angelo Gordon. Now it's TPG who bought Angelo Gordon. You know, we have a fund that we're maybe 30% allocated on of original. And then they just gave us $300 million.
Yeah.
And like, I am having trouble getting this stuff out the door. And that's just like one example. I mean, you have like Blackstone and Starwood, all these guys that are backing these local, or they're backing these companies that are going out and trying to place product in the space, but it's $5 million at a time. So it's interesting, you know, just to kind of see how many people have chased it. And, you know, I'd say I still do at least 55% traditional industrial, but now we're leasing a lot of this product here in the Metroplex and activities picked up a lot. We got some good leases done and
it
helps me understand. We started building relationships in the user market on that side, just because a lot of the businesses in iOS are not tenant repped, you know, like unless it's like Equipment Share or, you know, United Rentals, Chris Armstrong at Fisher, you know, FedEx has, you know, Fisher, but like 80% of your market's not represented.
Yeah.
So when you list the property, you can't just throw it on CoStar. You have to go find these people. So it's been fun, and happy to talk about as much iOS as you want or not.
But. Well, I think there's a lot of arbitrage in it. Mm-hmm. So there's money to be made, and it's always been there, but institutional capital put an acronym on it and made it safe.
Yep.
So,
and it's like one thing that I'm seeing. You know, we met with, I won't say which one, but one of the top like industrial investment sales teams in Dallas. And they came to us and they were just basically saying like, hey, like we're seeing unbelievable amounts of people try to buy this stuff in bulk.
Yeah.
Like, who do you know that are aggregators that have bought 5, 7, 10 of these things that we can help you underwrite, you know, for a portfolio? Because when you have like Blackstone that wants to buy...
Yeah, they got to make a transaction.
$500 million worth of the stuff, unless you're doing like Altera's done sale leasebacks, you know, with like Ahern, you know, they'll buy like 36 of them and spin off 16 here, you know, or IOV, but, you know, it's a maturing market. You know, Dallas is an interesting market for iOS because we don't have like a port, you know, or.
Right. It, iOS is different in different markets. Like you go to Houston, everybody's got iOS. There's no zoning. It's not that special down there, you know, but you get over to San Antonio and stuff like that. It's still very valuable. Same thing with Austin. You go to Oklahoma City, a lot of oil and gas guys. So there's a ton of iOS out there. But depending on what part of that market you're in, you can charge pretty good premiums on it. So.
Yeah. You know, and it's a lot of it's the same as Class B industrial real estate, the tenants you're dealing with, the owners you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And so it was a good blend for me. And, you know, our team spreads out and, you know, I get to work on different assignments every day, but, you know, blessed, man, just kind of get where I'm at. And, you know, so.
Well, I got some funny questions for you.
Perfect.
What was your worst cold call?
Man. Okay, my worst cold call, I would say, actually happened probably 2 or 3 weeks after I got to Mercer. I cold called an owner. I was all excited. It was one of Jeff's old clients. They own 2833, 2835 Irving Boulevard in the design district. They said, we got a tenant coming up, you know, we might want to sell it or lease it. So I did my first BOV. I was all jazzed. I won't say who it is, but the owner was flying in on that Friday. And so on a Wednesday, I'm out making calls. And I go to one of the big design district investors. And I'm like telling him who I am and what I'm looking to, you know, what I do. And I was just said, hey, I've got this off-market deal. You own the building next door.
Yeah.
Like, I'm meeting him on Friday. I did my BOV. I think it's worth this price, you know? And he was like, yeah, like once you talk to him, like I'd love to buy it. And I was all excited, you know? And, but I told him, I was like, I don't have the listing yet, but I'm going to get it on Friday. And so I remember going to pick up that owner at the airport. And the first question out of his mouth was like, who's John Smith? Like,
I'm gonna say yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, he called me and said, hey, he wrote me an offer. And then he said, you know, if you don't want to take my offer and you want to list it, don't go with him. Go with some other broker. And I was just like, remember like being like 23 and just being like, man, is this how the world works? Like, you know, yeah. I mean, I mean, just all of us could sit around and tell horror stories of cold calling. I mean, I probably have a funnier one that is not depressing like that one. But, I mean, I remember going on a cold call with Corby, you know, who is like the most straight laced, amazing human, and walking into a building in GSW and there's a weed farm in there, you know, and just like looking at Corby's face and seeing like, you know, he was like, ah! You know, secretly I was kind of like, yeah, but you know, anyway, yeah, that's a favorite part of my job is the different people you get to meet and the different niches. You've done asked these questions a few times. I mean, what's your funniest one?
Oh man, you got to flip it on me. Let's see. I'll just go with the, this is something Jeff taught us, and you would walk in. I remember I walked into this building on Regal Row, and this guy's sitting there. We've all seen him, right? He's sitting at his desk. There's shit piled up everywhere. You know, he's like a total mess. And I walk in, and he's just like, what are you doing here? And I was like, man, I was telling you about the space next door because I was fixing to list it. He just starts yelling at me and all this. Mm-hmm. He goes, don't you see out there? It says no soliciting. I go, and then this is what Jeff would always tell us, say, oh, I thought it said no smoking.
I'm sure that dissolved the situation. Like, yeah.
Get out of here. So,
funny. Okay. I won't flip it on you. Okay. Yeah, I got you.
No, but I just remember that guy sitting there and, but yeah, no, it's, there's always some funny situations. Well, let me ask you this. What's your favorite book you read? Like, what do you think is a book that's kind of changed some perspective for you?
Okay. I'll go with one I just finished about two nights ago. Uh-huh. Have you read How to Make a Few Billion Dollars by Brad Jacobs?
Uh-uh.
So I really liked it. Brad Jacobs is the guy who started United Rentals.
Okay.
And then he started XPO. Okay. He's taken seven. He started as like a oil and gas commodities trader, built a business. He started seven different companies that have each reached $1 billion evaluation.
Wow.
And I have a client, a guy named Steve Azar, that actually used to work for XPO. Yeah. So when I bought that book, I took a picture of him and texted to him. He was like, yeah, he's genius, but he's real you know, he's got some quirks, and I feel like
I think all of them do.
All those geniuses do. But, you know, one thing, I mean, it's a great book just because it's not about business. It's not really about how to crunch numbers and how to, it's all about interactions with people, and it's all about how he would create his mindset every day walking into these meetings. So he was in a state of mind that whenever a problem would come up, he's in the right place.
Yeah.
You know, like one thing I took from it is that I've started doing is like he talks about gratitude sessions with his employees.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't make it awkward, but like literally like I will just take notes of little things that I notice from my employees that I like. that they're doing. And then maybe once a quarter, I'll just informally go by there, ask them to come in my office with the notes in front of me.
Yeah.
And I'll go through the things, and they see the fact that I've taken notes, and I'll go through the things that they're appreciative of.
Yeah.
And then in turns, like, he's like, man, that loyalty that comes from that, you know, just little things like that. Like,
it's a great business owner.
He really is. And just like, I think in this business as well, like with, you know, I have a 13-month-old George.
Yep.
And then I have a 1-month-old Charlie.
Yep.
You know, they're 12 months, 16 days apart. 2023 was an interesting year for brokerage and real estate. And so if you have your mindset and your worth tied up into a particular deal or how this interaction is going to go, like, you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
But like, for, you know, one of the things he was just kind of talking about in that book was like, you know, he told a story about how he officiated his daughter's wedding. And he said that, like, Chloe told everybody, just like, in your mind, picture somebody, like a couple that has loved each other more than anyone in the world has ever loved each other. Okay. And now imagine the whole world of like successful marriages and love, and just like feel that amount of love and energy. And then just like, open your hands and just push all that love, like, on this couple.
Yeah.
And just like, and he said that like his daughter and his son-in-law cry, like, have come to him and been like, that's the most impactful moment in my life. And the reason I share that is because in this book, that's a cool experience for him.
Yeah.
But what he talks about is like when he wakes up in the morning and he's quiet and he's still, and he allows himself mentally to go back to that moment and seeing people pushing love towards his daughter and his son-in-law. And he's like, my mindset now, when I walk into work, I'm grateful for everything.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, you can't feel fear or anger simultaneously when you're feeling grateful. So he's like, it's a great book.
Yeah.
Long-winded answer, but
it sounds pretty cool.
It's a cool book.
What's kind of the things you do on the daily? Like, what's the things you got to do just to get David Gwynn right to go out and do what you do?
So I would say the last 14 months has been a little bit harder to set my daily routines, you know, with two boys, but you know, now I understand where you're coming from. So it's adjusting a little bit, but in my best mornings, you know, I wake up early and I'm in the Word, you know, or it doesn't have to be the Bible, but I'm seeking some sort of, like, you can take 15 minutes of content, whether it's a podcast or video, and listen to something that's going to enrich your life. So help me kind of put my mind in the right spot. I'm usually in the gym 3 mornings a week.
Yep.
But then just like routines and habits, what I've noticed just for me and being successful in brokerage, everybody has their own routines, and you can try and learn from people that are really successful, not recreate the wheel, but you can also tweak it and make it your own. You know, I didn't like driving availables when I was at Mercer. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I didn't like driving it and note taking and inputting it. Like, I was always failing that on my weekly deal, but it's something that y'all instilled in me to where now it's like, okay, at the end of the week, 3 o'clock on a Friday, you know, if I don't have a million things going on, I'll block it off on my team that has my calendar now.
Yeah.
So I'll block off on my calendar and I'll just run searches in these pockets of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll just keep track.
You're different type of availables, but you're working on studying your markets.
Right. But I mean, I still have my core market, which I consider, you know, Stemmons Corridor, Loop 12, and Harry Hines.
Yeah.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't hit every deal, but I'm going to be able to take ideas and hit the big deals.
Yeah.
So just keeping an eye on what's available. And I have a folder in my, you know, share drive that I'll save. And I think it's a great habit for any broker to know what's going on in your market.
I think that is one thing that, man, being a student, continually being a student is something that you just, it's irreplaceable. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like knowing Brook Hollow so well, even if someone didn't like me, they kind of hired me because they thought they could just get beat I would beat them some other way.
Yep.
And you know, like, this guy knows so much about the market that, like, if I don't hire him, I'm probably picking the wrong guy. So, well, what's something no one knows about David Gwynn?
Let's see, man. I mean, I would say, Because I talk so much, you know, that's why it's great. I'm on a podcast, you know, so like I can just talk. So I'm a pretty open book, you know.
Or what's something really unique about you that most people don't know?
Yeah.
Or some talent you have that.
Let's see. I would say in terms of. I'm just the most boring person in the world, but
no, this one stumps everybody.
It's hard, man. I would just say that, like, I'm extremely extroverted. I love being around people. I have FOMO all the time. Like if I miss out on friends doing something here, but you know, at the same time, like when I am, like, I'm really family driven, you know, so I don't know. That's a terrible answer. I'm not cool like you. I took guitar lessons when I was little, but you know, I mean, I would just say in terms of what makes me tick really, you know, is just kind of like my brother is successful. You know, he was the brainiac. He got a, you know, he's a professor at A&M, got his PhD when he's 27. My dad's successful. So like, I just have this internal drive to prove myself in my own game and in the terms of, you know, like I said, what kind of makes me tick, like why do I be consistent? Why do I wake up and do what I need to do, you know, every day to be successful? And I think it's kind of driven towards like, I want to be able to stand side by side with them and then just to be able to make decisions. And, you know, I think that like, just, I love being in the game more than anything. Like, yeah, if I...
I'm going to add to your answer here.
Thank you. Please help me out.
You're family oriented.
Yes.
I think something that's really interesting that you do is you and your brother go to an away Cowboys game every year.
Thank you. Yeah, perfect. Yep. 12 years in a row.
Yeah.
Night before my brother's wedding.
Yeah.
You know, 12 years ago. I remember, you know, I was still in college and it was... Hey, life's going to change. You're getting married, man. Yeah. Like, we got to, no matter what, once a year, just like you and me, just get together, you know, and catch up. And
I think that's awesome.
So we pick an out of town Cowboys game every year and, you know, usually find a good steakhouse and a casino and, you know, just kind of, but we just catch up on life. And so I like to think I know everything that's going on with him. And, and I think that is a great caveat just because something everybody doesn't know about me is like, I try to really live that proximity's power and like make relationships with people and really do things without asking for something in return. And because if you can find a peer that's intelligent or smarter than you, that may not even be in your niche of what you're doing, but will give you unbiased advice without asking for something back. It's helped me so much just in life. And like my brother is just somebody I trust so much.
Yeah.
And he's got a PhD in conflict resolution, you know? So like in our business, like just being able to explain a scenario and being like here. And then, you know, for him, you know, just all the stuff he's got going on. So,
well, it's funny. You know, one thing you've touched on a whole time is just we have it here. It's one of our core values and it's, we give value without expectation.
Yeah.
And, perfect. I think that's a, you know, I think it's funny. Sometimes Will come to me and he's like, I'm struggling with this right now with this guy. And look, you don't have to like give him everything, but like you can give him something, right? Like, so.
Well, my mercenaries always beat draftees, but volunteers will always crush them both. One thing that can't be quantified, but is critical to success is emotional investment.
Yeah.
You know, it's a term of like, how do you.
Where's that from? I saw that the other day and I thought that was a very interesting quote.
It was in that book, Brad Jacobs.
Okay.
Mercenaries
will always, what does it say again?
Patriots, not mercenaries, is my core value number one.
Yeah.
It's baseball, it's not football. I want every single one of you batting 400 with 60 home runs and 120 ribs.
Yeah.
It's about putting money in your pocket at the end of the day. But if you can come to a teammate with an idea.
Yeah.
And the first question out of your teammate's mouth is not, am I working on this?
Yeah.
Am I getting paid on this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I mean, when I was there, like that was so.
This doesn't really happen, but I sense this sometimes like at Mercer Company, like, hey, can I have your availables? Or like, well, I'm like, no, we're not working on this. This is my deal.
Yeah. And it's hard. You got
to. No, it's all good. I think people just covet their territories. You know what I mean? It's no big deal. But I like that. I think that's cool. Well, this has been pretty good, man. I really enjoyed it. We'll wrap this up, but we'll do this again. But really interesting journey. Really interested to see how far you go. We got a deal under contract right now. Excited about that.
Very excited. So
we'll keep cranking them here. So thanks again for coming on, and congrats to all your success.
Man,
and congrats to your two kids.
Thank you, man. We're going to bring them up there to meet them. They'll be making industrial cold calls, you know, before you know it.
That's right.
Congratulations to Matador and all the success that you guys have had.
Yeah, thank you.
Any brokers out there listening to this, if you want to show a deal to somebody and they think like you do, and they understand it may take 5 meetings with an owner to get him to successfully go with you, like, that's what I'd say about Matador. And really grateful to be here, man, to get to spend some time with you. And, you know, like I said, just out there in the market and what we do every day, I think it's just really important to keep your mindset where you need to be. And, you know, if you're running your process and you're confident in your own standards of success and what they are, and you have conviction in what that is, then no matter what's going on in the market, you know, you're going to be able to be here, and you're just going to be constantly growing, like you said, constantly going to school. And so it's great, man.
Awesome. David Gwynn. Thanks, man.
All right. Appreciate it.
See ya.
See ya.